This past week, and by the way, for the benefit of people who are listening on tape, today is September 7th of 1997. There's been all sorts of discussion about the death of Princess Diana, and I guess the microcephalics have weighed in a big way on the internet, claiming all sorts of theories about Diana's having been murdered. Chief among those microcephalics was Muammar Gaddafi. He didn't weigh in on the internet, but he stated that Princess Diana was murdered by the British royal family and French intelligence and British intelligence because she was boinking an Arab, which is simply ridiculous. In the world of big money, and Mr. Fayed, Dodi Al-Fayed's father, is one of the richest men in the world, race counts for nothing. For example, in Nazi Germany, if a Jew were sufficiently wealthy and would support the Nazi regime, he was deemed an honorary Aryan and went his or her way unmolested. In the world of power, there's no such thing as ethnic bigotry. In the world of great wealth and power, the Golden Rule rules. And the Golden Rule basically states that those who have gold rule. The British royal family would have nothing to gain from murdering Princess Diana. On the contrary, her death has further besmirched the royal family. Plus, they've been doing what they've been doing for hundreds of years, and they would have no need to engineer something like that. And beyond that, the circumstances surrounding Diana's death are not suggestive of an assassination. Neither Diana nor her husband-to-be or her lover, Dodi Al-Fayed, nor the driver of the car were wearing seatbelts. The one person who was, the bodyguard, Mr. Rhys Jones, survived the crash. If Princess Diana had been wearing a seatbelt, she'd still be alive in all likelihood. Banged up, probably, perhaps seriously injured, but alive nonetheless. There certainly are assassinations that take place in the corridors of power, and I think it is important and healthy to ask questions when powerful people die. However, I think those questions should be grounded upon an informed base and not simply compulsive or hysterical. Certainly we do get lied to in our news media, and I'm going to talk about the discrepancies in another very high-profile death. This one's certainly the result of foul play, the death of fashion designer Gianni Versace. So it is important, I think, to be intelligently and informed skeptical in an informed and educated fashion about the deaths of powerful people. However, I think one should not be compulsively or simplistically so. And in my opinion, much of the discussion surrounding Diana's death has been that I've never been asked more by more different people about somebody say, who do you think killed Diana? Well, if the information we're being given is correct, and I say if, I don't think it was a hit at all. I think it was the accident it was portrayed as being. For one thing, assuming for the sake of argument somebody wanted to rub out Princess Di, she and Dodi Al-Fayed took a private plane trip shortly before that fatal automobile crash. That would have been a much easier and more secure way of doing them in. And again, if Diana and Dodi Al-Fayed, certainly Diana had been wearing a seatbelt, she'd still be alive. Dodi Al-Fayed might have been killed anyway because he was in the front seat. Apparently, but no, actually, it might have been the driver who was in the bodyguard who was in the front seat. But the one person of the four in the crash who was wearing a seatbelt survived. Nonetheless, everybody been asking me, who do you think killed Princess Di? Who do you think killed Princess Di? And I think to a certain extent it has highlighted the skepticism that people feel concerning the deaths of the wealthy and powerful, and I think to a certain extent that's healthy. However, the fact that people are compulsive about these sort of things and do not ask these questions in an informed context, I think is rather disturbing. And there's an anecdote about Sigmund Freud. He was leaving a lecture, and Freud was very fond of large cigars. And one of his students asked him if his cigar could possibly be a phallic symbol and if this would indicate suppressed homosexual or sexual tendencies of some kind. Sigmund Freud took a puff on his cigar and looked at the student and remarked, "Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar." And that's the way I feel about the death of Princess Diana. If she'd been wearing a seatbelt, she'd still be alive. Nonetheless, though, I think it is important to ask questions about the deaths of people in the corridors of power. And also, I think it's important to view our news media with a healthy skepticism. I do think the spin on Diana's death is interesting. They're saying, well, we have to place restrictions on the news media. Well, in the United States, there are plenty of restrictions on the news media, most of them self-imposed. There's also a well-documented intelligence community component, nicknamed the Mighty Wurlitzer by former Deputy Director of Central Intelligence, Frank Wisner, that helps to keep Americans misinformed or disinformed or uninformed about key issues. From a methodological standpoint, and please note this is from a methodological standpoint, The difference between the standard reportage one tends to get in the American mainstream media and journalistic reality as it exists in other countries has been highlighted by the circumstances surrounding the death of fashion designer Gianni Versace. Now, Versace certainly was the victim of foul play. He was shot twice in the head, and that's what killed him. He has been portrayed as the victim of a lone gay serial killer, a fellow named Andrew Cunanan. There are discrepancies about the death of Gianni Versace. There has been speculation in the foreign media that Versace's company had been used to launder money for organized crime, that Versace had found out about that, perhaps was going to sing about it, and that's why he was killed. I cannot comment on that definitively. I certainly think it's something that should be considered and perhaps looked into. However, what I think is significant is the discrepancies between the version of Versace's death that we have been handed. Versace also, incidentally, an associate of Princess Diana, who attended his funeral. The difference between the standard accepted version of Versace's death in this country, again, the victim of a gay serial killer, and the circumstances as reported by some of the foreign media, I think are worth noting. And again, this half-hour segment should be approached from a methodological standpoint. I think one could view this as indicating why our news media should be viewed in a more discriminating and critically intelligent way than they generally are. Research credit on all three of these stories and translation credit on one of them goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. This first story comes from the Sunday Telegraph of July 27th of 1997 in the international news section. This is an article by James Langton, L-A-N-G-T-O-N. It's headlined, "Did Mafia Silence Versace to Hide Financial Scandal?" It's subtitled, "Miami is in the grip of rumors that the fashion designer was laundering money for the mob," says James Langton. And let me emphasize that I have no idea whether that is in fact the case. However, I do think some of the discrepancies in the official version of Versace's death, and in particular, take note of the relative lack of reportage on some of the things that are portrayed in the Sunday Telegraph article, and the relative lack of reportage on these things in the American media. And again, I think this program, this half-hour segment, should be approached from a methodological standpoint as an exercise in critical and intelligent scanning of the news. This article, again, from the Sunday Telegraph of July 27th of 1997, authored by James Langton, researched for us by Dave White. The article reads, "Gianni Versace was silenced by the mob. The execution-style killing was to stop the world's most glamorous fashion designer from revealing details of money laundering through his $500 million business empire. Andrew Cunanan was a convenient fall guy who was himself kidnapped by mafia hitmen and murdered to complete the deceit. So runs the most elaborate of the rumors sweeping the sultry streets of Miami Beach this weekend, a conspiracy theory as baroque as anything designed by the House of Versace. Even with the body of his alleged killer lying in a morgue, many of the most intriguing questions about both deaths remain unanswered. Unofficially dismissed by the police and the FBI, the possibility of a mafia connection continues to dog the investigation. Frank Monti, a private investigator who claims he was personally retained by the designer, says, quote, 'I am convinced that both Versace and Cunanan were murdered by the mob,' unquote." Mr. Monti, an Australian, by the way, it's M-O-N-T-E, beginning again, Mr. Monti, an Australian once involved in recruiting mercenary armies for Africa in the 60s, is a colorful personality who enjoys appearing on the radio show of the controversial American shock jock Howard Stern. He claims to have been recruited by the Italian designer first to look into the murder of a boyfriend of a close associate of Versace, but later became involved in other assignments, including allegations that money was being laundered through the company. It was to prevent Versace going to the Italian authorities that the mafia had Versace shot twice through the head on the steps of Casa Casuarina in his South Beach home." That South Beach, of course, is part of Miami Beach. Mr. Monti, continuing with the article, "Mr. Monti believes a dead bird allegedly found near the body was a traditional mob warning to those who might be tempted to, quote, sing, unquote, about the mafia. Cunanan's known presence in Miami Beach was a coincidence exploited by the real killers as a convenient smokescreen. Mr. Monti, who was based in New York, appeared at the beginning of last week for Andrew Cunanan to give him, excuse me, begin again, Mr. Monti, who was based in New York, appealed at the beginning of last week for Andrew Cunanan to give himself up before others silenced him. Quote, Nothing that has happened since then has changed my mind, unquote, he told the Sunday Telegraph yesterday. He says Cunanan was murdered by a professional hitman, probably last weekend, unquote, and stored in a freezer, the body later being moved to the houseboat where it was found on Wednesday evening. Remember that detail about the freezer. So we're going to discuss some of the discrepancies in the forensic evidence later on in the discussion. Continuing, quote, it is very convenient for the FBI to say otherwise because they get to clean up five murders, unquote. Reports have identified a .40 caliber gun stolen by Cunanan from a previous victim as the weapon used to murder Versace and later used in the alleged suicide. However, despite a widespread assumption that the same gun was used, the police and FBI have not yet been able to confirm this. There are also discrepancies about the injuries to Cunanan, which left his head so disfigured that the authorities could not immediately identify him, and the neat bullet holes in the back of Versace's skull. Mr. Monty doubts that the same weapon was used and says that the ballistic evidence has been, quote, fudged, unquote. Miami Beach police say they have no record of a dead bird being recovered during their sweep of the area around the Versace mansion after the killing. They have released little information about the last days of Cunanan, which include a gap of 5 days before the killing after he checked out of a cheap hotel where he had been hiding for nearly 2 months. For at least some of that time, he may have been living in boats moored in Indian Creek, a narrow stretch of water behind South Beach. The owner of one yacht reported finding cushions moved and two newspapers, including the Italian Corriere della Sera headlining the Versace murder. Police say they, quote, strongly suspect, unquote, Cunanan was living on the boat on the day of the murder. The FBI has also interviewed Thorsten Reineck, the German businessman who owned the luxury houseboat where Cunanan's body was found after a four-hour police siege. Reineck, R-E-I-N-E-C-K, wanted on fraud charges in Germany, has been cleared of any involvement by the FBI after being interviewed in Las Vegas. Although Reineck owned a gay nightclub and health spa in Las Vegas, where a man resembling Cunanan was seen earlier this year, and a restaurant in Miami Beach where he is known to have eaten, no connection between the two men has been established. Cunanan's last hours are a mystery. The caretaker of the houseboat seems to have heard a single shot after going on board for the first time in a week. However, there are reports that a man was later seen moving inside as police surrounded it, with some witnesses hearing a second shot as officers stormed the vessel. Reporters were originally told that no body had been found, a lie that went uncorrected for several hours. In fact, Cunanan's body was found in the master bedroom within 2 minutes. Richard Barreto, B-A-R-R-E-T-O, the Miami Beach police chief, later apologized to the media, blaming unspecified, quote, logistical, unquote, problems. Among the evidence recovered from the houseboat is a locked safe, which police say will not be opened until they have obtained the proper search warrants tomorrow. And please take note of that safe, because we're going to touch on that in just a couple of minutes. The caretaker, let me begin again with this paragraph. Among the evidence recovered from the houseboat is a locked safe, which police say will not be opened until they have obtained the proper search warrants tomorrow. The caretaker had recently changed the lock, but there was no sign that Cunanan had broken in. The FBI revealed on Friday that Cunanan had called a friend after the murder, asking for help to get a passport. Results of an autopsy have not been released by the medical examiner's office. Cunanan was apparently growing his hair as a disguise. Attention of the American media is focused on Cunanan's motives. The Versace family has repeatedly denied that the designer knew his alleged killer. Cunanan is known to have been $46,000 in debt when he began his killing spree. Although no suicide note was found at the scene, a letter sent to the Miami Herald on the day of his death contains references to AIDS and crimes committed by Cunanan. The letter had been typed and was unsigned. Note that, please. We're going to touch on that later. Florida authorities will seek a blood test on Cunanan's remains this week to establish if he was suffering from AIDS, a widespread rumor which many believe may explain what pushed him over the edge. I would add parenthetically, those tests proved negative. Cunanan was not suffering from AIDS. Continuing, Florida law normally prohibits the disclosure of results of HIV tests, but the Dade County State Attorney will seek a legal motion for disclosure on the basis of establishing a motive. We're going to go over many of these points of information a little later on in the program, or in this half-hour segment. That, again, was from the Sunday Telegraph in Britain of July 27th of 1997. The article is by James Langton, and it's in the international news section. The London Independent of that same day, that's July 27th of 1997, Also had an interesting article about the Versace killing. This is an article by Phil Davison, D-A-V-I-S-O-N. This also was researched for us by Dave White. The headline reads, Versace, After the Murder, the Mystery. And this is subheaded, Now America's, quote, most wanted man, unquote, is dead, reports Phil Davison. The FBI hopes to learn why he took the lives he did, including, supposedly, his own. And again, there are many, many questions about this case, the discrepancies in the ballistics evidence, the discrepancies in the various reports of the finding of Cunanan's body, the IDing of the body, and as we're going to see, the temperature of the body. There are many discrepancies in the forensic evidence. I do not have an answer to these discrepancies. However, I think they certainly raise some interesting questions about the way this case has been handled in the American media. The article reads, again, this from the Independent of July 27th of 1997, an article by Phil Davison, Versace, After the Murder, the Mystery. Alleged gay serial killer Andrew Cunanan may not, after all, have taken his secrets with him to the grave. A small portable safe found close to his body could hold vital evidence to throw light on the murders of fashion designer Johnny Versace and four other people. FBI agents last night sought a separate search warrant to study the contents of the dark blue 15-inch by 18-inch safe after removing it from the houseboat where America's most wanted man reportedly shot himself on Wednesday. They were not sure whether it belonged to Cunanan or the houseboat's eccentric owner, Torsten Reinick, a German who owns a gay health spa in San Diego and bills himself as a diplomat from the, quote, Principality of Sealand, unquote. Quote, We believe the safe may contain evidence related to the five homicides, unquote, an FBI spokesman said. Since Cunanan appeared to have had a key and to have known the combination, investigators hope he may have left either a suicide note, explanations for his alleged five murders, or evidence linking him to the crime, such as gold coins stolen from one victim. The FBI hopes to study the contents tomorrow. A purported Cunanan suicide note was received by the Miami Herald newspaper on Friday, but police did not appear to consider it authentic. The envelope was postmarked July 24th, the day after Cunanan reportedly killed himself, but the letter carried today's date, July 27th. It contained, quote, somewhat unfocused, unquote, references to the crimes, the newspaper said. Meanwhile, the headlines no longer focus on Cunanan or Versace. Now it is the, quote, caretaker, unquote, who is the lead character. Fernando Carrera, C-A-R-R-E-I-R-A, a 71-year-old Portuguese-born caretaker who says he stumbled into Cunanan on a houseboat last Wednesday, was, it turns out, wielding a pistol when Cunanan reportedly shot himself. He supposedly committed suicide after the caretaker discovered him, initiating a massive police siege. Various changes or discrepancies in the caretaker's story remain the talk of the town here, where many people still question the confused police version of how and when Cunanan's body was found. After assaulting and searching the houseboat based on the caretaker's tip, police announced they had found no one. 2.5 hours later, they said there was a body on the main bed. Only the following morning, 14 hours after initiating the siege, did they say it was the 27-year-old killer, even though the first police detective on the scene said it took him just 5 seconds to recognize the wanted man. Some doubted whether Cunanan, after apparently basking in world fame, would have committed suicide merely because a caretaker may have noticed him. Others saw it as further evidence that the Italian mafia was behind last week's killing of Versace, with or without Cunanan's participation, and suggested Cunanan may have been killed to shut him up. At a news conference here on Friday to claim a $65,000 reward, Mr. Carrera, for the first time, revealed his wife had been with him on Wednesday afternoon when he noticed that the houseboat on a canal off Miami Beach was not locked. He also admitted he himself had not called the police, but that he had called his 15-year-old son, who in turn phoned the 911 emergency number. He said he and his wife went onto the houseboat and noticed some items had been moved around. Quote, I draw my gun, then I hear boom from upstairs, he said. That, police say, was the moment Cunanan shot himself, but the sudden revelation of another gun in the hands of a 71-year-old caretaker thickened the plot. Quote, For all we know, he could have been a conspirator with Cunanan, unquote, said Seymour Gelber, G-E-L-B-E-R, mayor of Miami Beach, explaining why Mr. Carrera should not get the reward before the Versace murder investigation is complete. While there is no suggestion he was involved in Cunanan's death, his changing versions are fueling further doubts among skeptics. Mr. Carrera filed a lawsuit against Miami Beach and Dade County to claim the reward and was massively backed by TV and radio phone-ins, as well as a petition billing him as a hero. Again, there are many discrepancies in the various versions of this story, and we're going to discuss those to a certain extent in just a minute. Note now, originally in the first of the articles that I read, the Sunday Telegraph article from 7/27/97, notes the following detail, or note the following allegation, I should say. And again, this is from this fellow, Frank Monti, a private investigator who claims he was personally retained by the designer. Also note that Mr. Monti, and I'm not casting aspersions on the individual, he was involved with recruiting mercenary armies for Africa in the 60s, may very well have been involved with the intelligence community in that particular regard. I would also note that he apparently, at least according to this article, is a frequent guest on Howard Stern's program. That is not, in my estimation, the best of journalistic credentials. I think Howard Stern essentially is more flatulent than he is credible under the circumstances. However, Mr. Monti, by his own account, a private investigator who was retained by Versace, has advanced the following hypothesis. He apparently had appealed at the beginning of last week for Andrew Cunanan to give himself up before others silenced him. And then returning again to the Sunday Telegraph article, quote, "Nothing that has happened since then has changed my mind," unquote, he told the Sunday Telegraph yesterday. He says Cunanan was murdered by a professional hitman, quote, "probably last weekend," unquote, and stored in a freezer, the body later being moved to the houseboat where it was found on Wednesday evening, quote, "It is very convenient for the FBI to say otherwise because they get to clean up five murders," unquote. Note that allegation, and I'm not suggesting that the allegation is necessarily correct. However, I do think that it needs to be intelligently evaluated in light of the following information. Just as were the two previous articles, the following article also was researched for us by Dave White, who also translated it for us. This is from La Repubblica's article, issue of Monday, August 18th of 1997. That's an article by Vittorio Zucconi, Z-U-C-C-O-N-I, entitled Mysteries of the House of Cunanan. It's on page 8 and 9 of La Repubblica of 8/18/97. The article reads in part as follows. On June 5th, a few weeks before Versace's murder, Torsten Reinecke, an East German wanted by the police, secretly sold the houseboat to another East German, Matthias Ruhl, R-U-E-L-L. Reinecke was a con man. The proof was on the dining room table. Dozens of phony East German license plates, several officers' caps from the East German army, and ambassador's credentials from a non-existent republic called Sealand. A report written by one of the first policemen who entered the houseboat reads, quote, "We monitored his body for signs of life. There weren't any. The subject felt cold. He had obviously been dead many hours." And again, that is, I think, questionable if Mr. Carrera did indeed hear the shot that killed Cunanan, then call the police. One wonders whether he would have been that cold. Then the article continues, "But how could Cunanan's body be cold in a house where the power and air conditioning," that's a houseboat, "but how could Cunanan's body be cold in a houseboat where the power and air conditioning had been off for 2 hours and where the temperature was 104 degrees and rising? And why doesn't anyone know the results of the autopsy which was performed 3 weeks ago?" I think these are interesting questions, and again, I want to stress I do not have an answer to that, but it may be that the discrepancy in the body temperature, which one would not expect to be that low under the circumstances, may, and I say may, lend substance to Mr. Monti's working hypothesis. And again, some of the other discrepancies, the neat holes in the back of Versace's skull, the fact that the Cunanan's body was so disfigured that the authorities could not immediately identify him, and yet there are other accounts that he was identified almost immediately. Reading now, and note some of the discrepancies, the Sunday Telegraph of 7/27/97. "There are also discrepancies between the injuries to Cunanan, which left his head so disfigured that the authorities could not immediately identify him, and the neat bullet holes in the back of Versace's skull. Mr. Monti doubts that the same weapon was used and says that the ballistic evidence has been, quote, fudged," unquote. And I would also note that is at variance with the following. "Various changes or discrepancies in the caretaker story remain in the talk of the town here, where many people still question the confused police version of how and when Cunanan's body was found. After assaulting and searching the houseboat based on the caretaker's tip, police announced they had found no one. 2.5 hours later, they said there was a body on the main bed. Only the following morning, 14 hours after initiating the siege, did they say it was the 27-year-old killer, even though the first police detective on the scene said it took him just 5 seconds to recognize the wanted man. And again, there are numerous other discrepancies in the article as well. And by the way, this half-hour segment will be permanently available from Spitfire. I want to stress again, I do not know the answer to these questions. I do think they are very important questions. And if nothing else, I think they highlight the necessity to view American journalism with an informed but critical and somewhat jaundiced eye. I do not know who killed Johnny Versace and why. I would also note that among the muddying factors in the investigation is the admittedly tense relationship that has always existed between law enforcement and the gay and lesbian community. I also think the journalistic spin on this, you know, the gay serial killer is worth noting. Certainly isn't going to do the gay community any good from a PR standpoint. I do think that the allegations of organized crime involvement warrant further scrutiny. And again, this is by way of a methodological consideration with regard to how one should view the media. And again, I'm doing this half-hour segment in the wake of the firestorm of discussion about who killed Princess Diana. Well, as I said, if the information we are given is correct, and it's possible that there's disinformation or inconsistencies, but if what we've been told is correct, and if the driver had a snootful and was driving at 110 miles an hour, well, that will do it. You get drunk and drive 110 miles an hour, and you aren't going to be long for the world. And I would also note that even despite that, if Diana had been wearing a seatbelt, she would probably be alive today. Not suggestive of a hit at all. And indeed, I would also note that Diana's death has further sullied the British royal family. It hasn't done them any good. I would also note in this regard, too, I think Prince Charles has had a bad rap. He may be a little stuffy, but he's probably the closest the British royal family per se has ever had to a genuine, quote, man of the people, unquote. It's very ecologically conscious. When Margaret Thatcher was crushing the British Coal Miners Union in the early 1980s, Prince Charles was very outspoken on behalf of the coal miners, and that took a lot of civil courage for a member of the British aristocracy to support the coal miners' union. This at roughly the same time that Ronald Reagan was crushing the air controllers' union here in the United States. So Prince Charles has basically had a bad rap. My own feeling is, at least in the United States, in which the journalistic and political culture is frankly childish and flatulent, it's because he has funny-looking ears with the Saturday morning cartoon show journalistic and political ethic that pervades America. That would be enough to get him dissed in most circles. The fact of the matter is, he's a pretty good fellow, albeit perhaps a bit stuffy, and I'm certainly not in a position to comment on the marital infidelities of both of them. It's tragic when somebody dies as young as Princess Diana. At the same time, she was a member of the British aristocracy herself, and throughout her 36 years, although she may have had to endure the indignities of the public spotlight, let's just say she wasn't exactly sweating the rent and was never in the position to go hungry. So I think she had a relatively happy life. And as I said before, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, as Sigmund Freud said. I think the notion that the British royal family would have had her killed for boinking an Arab is ridiculous. In the circles of the extremely wealthy, ethnicity takes a back seat to one's credit rating. And I would also note that there are, however, questions about whether the driver was really as drunk as we were told. I can't comment on those authoritatively. Most of those questions have come from the Fayed family themselves, who would not only have a lot of PR egg on their faces if indeed they let the driver be that drunk when he drove, but they also are potentially open to a lawsuit. Anyway, that concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.